You breathed infinity into my world, and time was lost up in a cloud and in a whirl. We dug a hole in the cool gray earth and lay there for the night. Then you said, wait for me, we'll fly the wind. We'll grow old and you'll be stronger without him. But oh, now my world is at your feet. I was lost and I was found, but I was alive and now I've drowned.
This is Dreaming of Spring Now, a Stranger Things fanfic written by And What You Said and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated PG-13 and contains the implied pairing of Eddie Munson, Steve Harrington, with additional tags for alternate universe, canon divergence, time loop, aftermath of the time loop, post Stranger Things Season 4 Volume 2, implied relationships, pre-relationship, ambiguous open ending. POV Eddie Munson. Eddie Munson lives. Author's notes. Mega sparkly emoji thanks to the truly brilliant, the amazing Bard for gifting me with the genesis of this story. A time loop, but only the aftermath. And to the Herculean carbon-based 000 for the especially gracious beta read and for never missing. Title sourced from So Much for Stardust by Fallout Boy. Other than this, I don't really know what to say. Thank you, as always, for choosing to read.
So now I will be waiting for the world to hear my song, so they can tell me I was wrong. But they went there beneath your stare, and they went stripped till they were bare of any bindings from the world outside that room. And they went taken by the hand and led through fields of naked land, where any preconceived ideas are blown away. So I couldn't say no.
They're all breathing heavily in the aftermath, but Steve especially, lying flat on his back with his arms stretched out like he doesn't care about the mucus and guts of the Upside Down spread around him. His eyes are clenched shut as he takes deep, heaving breaths that Eddie can hear from a foot away.
Did we do it?
Dustin asks, cutting through the silence like a knife.
I think we did, man, Eddie says.
He clears his throat like ridding it of cobwebs, despite the furious yelling they'd all been engaged in mere moments ago.
I think we really did.
Nancy's still surveying the area, like she hasn't quite let her guard down. But Robin tosses her weapons to the side and rips off her vest, leaving a torn t-shirt beneath, drenched with sweat and blood and likely other mess, and lets out a ginormous scream, the opposite of a battle cry, as if exhaling all they've been holding in. Everyone else startles, but Eddie laughs and then joins in, tossing his weapons aside too and throwing his bandana as high in the air as he can manage. It nearly disappears into the black sky as he whoops and hollers, riling Dustin up until he joins too. The walkie abruptly crackles to life. Once a deadened connection, now Lucas's voice comes through, asking urgently for them to respond. Eddie scoops the walkie up from its forgotten place on the ground with a huge grin and presses the button to report back.
Roger that, Sinclair. We're in the clear.
There's a crackling pause, and then, with palpable relief, Lucas says,
Us two. Well, what are you waiting for? Hurry back!
Eddie tosses Dustin the walkie, who catches it with a grin of his own. The sky crackles overhead then, much like the walkie had,
But for the first time, it doesn't make them all jump. A noise like thunder rolls through and it starts to rain. Real rain, real water, like a storm after a prairie fire. Eddie resists the urge to open his arms to it and turn his face skyward to catch raindrops on his tongue, and instead reaches down to finally offer Steve a hand up. He has to wave it in Steve's field of vision to get him to notice, shouting over the din of the downpour. "Hey, Harrington, come on! We got a one-way ticket out of here!" Steve closes his eyes and breathes in like he is steeling himself, then finally looks up at Eddie and accepts his hand, letting himself be hauled to his feet. He doesn't move away once they're upright, standing nearly nose to nose with Eddie, holding his hand still, though his grip isn't tight, just lingering. If Eddie didn't know better, he'd think Steve was caressing the back of his hand with his fingers, that Steve was feeling the delicate webbing of skin between his knuckles. "You think we really did it this time?" Steve asks quietly. His eyes flash as lightning passes over them, shining like car headlights in the dark. Eddie furrows his brow. "Yeah, man, pretty convincing evidence here," he says. And then, more slowly, "Why wouldn't we?" Steve looks at him for a long minute, searching. His mouth drops open like he's going to say something. His face seems suddenly gaunt in the fractured light, dark circles under his eyes like he hasn't slept in months, though it's only been a few days. The shine to his hair going lank, damp under the rain. The other side to the coin of the handsome hero's face. "Guys," Robin shouts from across the clearing. "You heard the man. What are we waiting for? Let's go!" The lightning shifts as Steve breaks eye contact and comes into motion. He drops Eddie's hand in favor of clapping him on the shoulder and nodding over to Robin, so they take off, following her, Nancy, and Dustin back through the gate, which drops them down into Eddie's trailer. He'd nearly forgotten about its existence entirely. Some of the rain falls through with them, but disappears like dust and ash in the air, as if it can't make contact on this side. The gate itself glows and wobbles, like an open wound pulsing. "We'll go to mine," Steve says. They all twist around to look at him. He swallows thickly, his throat bobbing. "It'll be safe there. Dustin, tell Lucas we're coming. We'll get them on our way." "How?" Nancy cuts in with a kind of deja vu. "It's not like we have a car." "I know where we can get one," Steve says, without missing a beat. He's already crossing the room to the door, opening it with familiar ease. But he waits for them on the other side of the threshold, looking back and beckoning everyone over. "Well," he says, when they remain still, "do you have a better idea?" Eddie glances at Robin, who glances right back at him before her gaze slips to Nancy, then Dustin. "No," Robin says slowly in the ensuing silence, "but we shouldn't be around, you know," Steve interrupts, gesturing up at the gaping hole in the ceiling, still glowing and wobbling like a snake undulating between blades of grass. "When that thing decides to do whatever it's going to do." As if in response, the whole ceiling pulses hard, and rain droplets sneak through the crack, a shadow of ash falling. Eddie grabs reflexively for the phantom spear strapped to his back. "Okay, yeah," he says, staring at it warily. "I'm not exactly looking for a second miracle." That gets them all out the door in record time, following Steve, who's ducking under the yellow barrier tape surrounding the trailer and heading to the forest. He's moving fast, turning to walk backwards and gesture them onwards as if impatient, though his eyes seem elsewhere, searching behind them, then in front of them. Eddie can't even get his own eyes to adjust to the twilight that remains. Lighter than the upside down, but not like afternoon sun. It's so fucking weird that it's light out at all. He jogs to catch up to Steve. Hey, Eddie says, struggling to keep pace as Steve charges them deeper into the woods. I know this area pretty well, and I gotta say, I've never seen a stray vehicle lying around. You sure you're, you know, feeling all right, man? Never better, Steve mutters, but it's mindless, like the smile he flashes to Eddie. Maybe it's supposed to be reassuring. Steve grasps Eddie's elbow then, as if collecting a stray object in his orbit, hauling Eddie along while he shouts over his shoulder, "Come on, guys, we're almost there!" His grip is like a vice. "Should be right around here," he mutters under his breath, eyes scanning the trees ahead. Eddie hesitates, and then puts his hand over Steve's on his arm to get his attention, to get him to loosen it up a little, stumbling over his next few steps. When it doesn't work, he forces them to a stop. "I think we can slow down, man," Eddie says, breathing hard from the walk. "Let them catch up, you know? Nothing's chasing us now. You kind of made sure of that." He knocks the side of his fist into Steve's chest. Steve flinches, and his hand tightens momentarily on Eddie's arm before he seems to remember himself and releases him, taking a huge step back. Yeah, right, Steve says, clearing his throat and glancing away.
"Good idea."
He waits there, looking back at the girls and Dustin. He doesn't look at Eddie again once, not even when Eddie cracks a joke that gets a faint smile to fall over Steve's face like a mist rising before dissipating again.
Lo and behold, a Chevy truck is indeed stashed in the woods, keys tucked under the windshield, which Steve seems to reach for blindly. He ushers them into the truck, Eddie squashed in the back between Dustin and Nancy, Robin taking passenger as Steve fires up the engine. Steve places a hand on Robin's seat backrest as he reverses them back the long trail they'd hiked up. His eyes flick to Eddie's, then back through the windshield. The truck lurches as Steve switches gears and drives, much like he had in the RV that afternoon, his hands tight across the steering wheel, near strangling it. Though Eddie doesn't have as good a view now as he'd had earlier in the day from beside Steve. He'd been momentarily shocked when Steve had asked him to help with the map to the war zone. Almost pointed at himself and asked, just to be sure, "Me?" But Ed shook it off in time to climb forward through the RV to the passenger seat while they'd barreled down the highway. Makes sense now for Robin to ride shotgun. At least her hand on Steve's shoulder looks steadying. "Steve," Robin says, voice quiet, though Eddie can hear her over the tires treading along the forest floor. "No one's chasing us anymore, right?" "Right," Steve says, but he stays tense as a board.
"How'd you know this was here?" Dustin asks while looking out the window.
"I'll tell you later," says Steve, which seems more surprising than if he'd said lucky guess. Dustin glances sharply over, but then Steve asks, "Did you radio Sinclair?" So Dustin fumbles to pull out the walkie. Erica, Max, and Lucas seem the same as when they dropped them off earlier that day, if exhausted and drained. Dustin scoots into Eddie's side to make room in the middle of the seat bench for Erica, who lets herself flop half onto Dustin and almost passes out on the drive. Max and Lucas curl up on the truck floor in the back seat by their feet. Steve insists on it, rather than allow them to climb into the truck bed, although it makes no sense to Eddie why that'd be any more comfortable, crouched and squashed as they are.
Steve makes a short drive to his place, cutting directly across town, at least. He parks them behind another unfamiliar car in the driveway, and once the engine's off, turns to Robin.
"Just wait here a sec," he tells her, as if awaiting permission.
They stare at each other for a long beat, making eye contact, trying to read each other's minds, maybe, before Robin nods and Steve climbs out of the truck. "Okay," Nancy says, as soon as Steve disappears through the front door. Eddie's eyes jerk over to her on the other end of the back seat.
"What the hell, Robin?"
"Don't ask me," Robin says defensively, raising her hands. "If anyone would know what's going on, it'd be you," says Nancy. "He just looked at you like you two hatched this plan."
"Going on with what?"
Erica asks, rousing herself beside Nancy.
"The truck," says Dustin.
"It doesn't make any sense how he got not just the truck," cuts in Nancy.
"I don't know,"
Robin repeats, more defensive, peering around her seat to look at them piled in the back.
"How would I know?"
"He had to have said something," says Dustin. "He would have. If he had a plan, he would have. And he didn't tell me anything."
"He didn't tell me anything either," says Nancy.
"Well, I can't actually read his mind," says Robin, growing animated. "Does it matter?"
"Does it matter?"
Dustin bursts out with. "How could it not matter? Steve doesn't hide stuff. He's not a hider. So if he's hiding something, then we ought to know," finishes Nancy.
"Doesn't it always go like this?" Eddie puts in.
Says Lucas from below him, arms slumped around his knees.
"Not exactly."
The driver's side door jerks open, and they all jump. "Hey," Steve says, a little breathless, eyes bouncing between their faces.
"We're clear. Come on."
He goes around the side of the truck to open the back door and help them climb out, seeming to take careful attention with Max, who scoffs and brushes off the special treatment, tells him to stop acting like such a loser big brother, which finally gets Steve to drop it. The inside of Steve's house is empty, lying untouched as though preserved in a time capsule. The lights are on, like he'd intended to warm the place up, but the preternatural stillness consumes them in a big gulp. Eddie shakes himself out of it and corrals the kids out of the foyer into the living room. They collapse on Steve's couch and carpeted floor in the ringing silence. In answer to no one in particular, Steve explains awkwardly that it's his parents' anniversary this week, so they'd shipped out on a trip, hadn't planned to return until after spring break.
"Go on," Steve finishes. "Make yourself at home."
It pops the silence like a balloon. Only then does everyone finally start taking off their jackets and shoes and the rest of the gear they'd been hauling. Steve disappears again. Back to the front door, the noise of his footsteps followed by a complicated series of locks clicking into place. Eddie puts it out of his mind, happy to take his shoes off for once. The carpet is plush and soft against his bare feet. He's definitely going to hell for destroying it with his grimy bare toes, but he kind of can't find it in himself to feel too bad.
"Fuck you, world,"
he thinks, watching the threads of the carpet between his toes.
"I lived."
A while later, after a mountain of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and a liter of soda gets divided among the group, and Eddie feels 75% more certain that reality is real, he borrows the kitchen phone to dial Wayne at the hotel he's holed up in, shakily breathing into the receiver at the sound of Wayne's voice over the line. They'd brought evidence back with them that Eddie isn't the culprit, but he has no idea where it's supposed to go from here. Something about contacting an Owens?
Wayne doesn't need to hear the details anyway. Satisfied with the testament to Eddie being alive and well. Thank God for that, because Eddie doesn't even know what he can say.
Where are you now, son?
Wayne asks, voice tinny and muffled through the receiver.
I'll come get you. Wherever it is. I don't mind.
Oh, Eddie says, hesitating. No one really explained the post-upside-down protocol. Steve chooses that exact moment to re-enter the kitchen, carrying empty plates and two glasses in one hand. His eyes dart over to Eddie, then away. Don't worry about it, Eddie says into the line, and at Wayne's noise of concern or disbelief, I'm staying at a friend's tonight. Maybe it's a shot in the half-dark, but probably going to land just fine, if the line of Steve's shoulders through his filthy shirt is anything to read. Eddie turns away to face the corner wall, hunching his shoulders like he could create a privacy screen as he murmurs to Wayne, I'll call you back later, all right? Take care of yourself, old man. Lay low, would you? Wayne scoffs at him for being in any position to give that kind of advice, and then makes him promise to call any time he needs.
Any time, day or night.
Eddie sets the phone in the cradle after, stares at it. Though he doesn't even know what he'd pick it back up for, just to hear his old man's breathing, he guesses, and then turns around. Steve's still in the kitchen, busying himself at the counter by scrubbing a spot with a sponge like he's been at it for a while. Eddie clears his throat, but Steve doesn't react. So Eddie bridges the distance between them and ventures,
Hey, thanks again for letting me use the phone. What?
Steve startles, and then, Oh yeah, no problem, man. His voice sounding a little funny, like he has a head cold or something. He flips the faucet on and lets the water run, rinsing the sponge and his hands beneath it, as repetitive and rhythmic as the wiping had been.
I hope it was all right. What I told Wayne, I mean. That's my uncle,
Eddie offers to clarify, leaning against the counter to get a look at Steve's face.
Just didn't want him to have to drive out all this way by himself until we figure it's safe. And besides, I don't know what we'll do with, you know, the small fact of me being a fugitive and you all being accomplices by association.
Eddie can see from his profile that Steve huffs a laugh, but it's dry. Short.
Right. Yeah. That. Yeah. That.
Eddie repeats with emphasis. Then clears his throat again because after all the commotion earlier, the silence is clawing at him.
So, it's cool if I camp out here for the night or whatever? It's no big deal if Wayne's gotta come by or...
What? Steve says again, confused, like he's hearing Eddie for the first time. He turns to look at him, but his eyes glance off Eddie's face quickly, like a magnet repelling. Of course, he says, and takes an odd pause, like he wants to say something else, but catches himself, his mouth opening, then closing. Finally, he says, You don't even have to ask.
Oh.
Says Eddie, reeling back on his feet.
All right, cool.
Cool, says Steve, still not looking at him. He flips off the water, then turns away to dry his hands on the towel hanging from the oven drawer on the other side of the kitchen, rather than going for the one folded neatly by Eddie's elbow on the counter.
You okay?
Eddie says to Steve's back, the sudden tight line of his shoulders.
Like, really? I mean, I know you've done this kind of thing before, but that was pretty gnarly.
I haven't. Steve interrupts, voice choked, his body going still.
I haven't done this before.
Eddie blanches as Steve's shoulders hunch up by his ears and then start to quake. He seems to fold all at once like a house of cards, his hands flying up to his face, his knees buckling. Eddie rushes over to catch him before he drops to the floor. "Whoa, hey," says Eddie, one knee on the floor in a half crouch, his arm around Steve's shoulders to hold him up. Steve slumps into Eddie's side as if giving under a great, terrible weight, his hand falling from his face to grip Eddie's vest tight, his forehead rolling against Eddie's collar, like he's turning instinctively into Eddie's chest. It's a lot more Steve Harrington, a lot more suddenly than Eddie ever expected to get. Eddie says, but forces himself not to be too weird, rubbing his hand over Steve's shoulder. Steve's fucking shaking. You're good, man, he says, wincing, which luckily Steve can't see because what the fuck is he supposed to say? It's all good now.
Yeah, I know. Sorry,
Steve says in this awful, choked, grinding voice. He starts to pull away, loosening his fist in Eddie's shirt to push off from his chest, rising to stand, wiping at his face with the back of his hand.
Sorry, I don't know how to...
No, don't be, Eddie says, rising from the floor with him. It's been a fucking long-ass day. Week. Whatever. He encourages Steve back into him by the arm still around his shoulder, because whatever's going on, it seems like he could use the hug, and fuck it. That Eddie can do. Steve takes it as permission. He turns fully into Eddie, wrapping both arms around him and pressing his face to Eddie's so they're cheek to cheek. It suddenly seems Eddie's the one getting hugged, not Steve. Steve, who's warm everywhere, like he's trying to subconsciously convince Eddie to melt into him in return. His arm is sturdy around Eddie's back, his other hand cradling Eddie's head, who still won't meet Eddie's eyes, though Eddie can feel the slow drip of tears gliding down his face where their cheeks are touching, sluicing through the crevice. I'm so fucking relieved, honestly, Steve says in a whisper, breath fluttering against his ear. I don't know what to do with all this relief, Eddie. The way he says Eddie's name, real intimately, tenderly, it's almost like he's saying a different word altogether. Yeah? That it's over, you mean? Eddie says, trying to hang on to the conversational thread. Not just that it's over, Steve says, drawing a deep breath in, dragging across Eddie's ear. Another tear drips down the crevice. Eddie's arm tightens around Steve's back. The kitchen door bursts open, banging against the wall, and Eddie jerks away from Steve, heart pounding like he's been caught with a hand in the cookie jar. It's just the kids gathered in the threshold, wondering where the extra pillows and blankets live, assuming there are any to begin with. By the time Eddie glances at Steve, Steve's already wiped his face clean and has found another task to occupy himself with on the other end of the kitchen, giving his back to the kids while he tells them to look in the cabinets by the laundry. Steve Harrington, now a hider of things, Eddie thinks. They move the furniture out of the way and lay out what seems to be every sleeping bag, unzipped and spread open, every guest room pillow, every blanket and sheet from every bed and cabinet in the house, all across the living room floor. No one wants to be alone. It's pitch black beyond the sliding glass doors that lead to the pool and patio, not even a silver thread of moonlight illuminating anything. And the spring wind whistles through the open kitchen window. Eddie has half a mind to keep the window shut, but it also seems like that might make it worse somehow. All the noise trapped in with them, no clue of what's happening out there. It had been hard enough to tolerate the curtain closed in around him while he showered earlier. Steve, having been generous enough to let everyone take turns, rotating among the three bathrooms until they'd all had, at minimum, a cursory scrub and a clean change of clothes. The kids had claimed a corner and whispered back and forth furiously for a while, their voices rising in punctuated bursts before settling and quieting altogether. They're sacked out now. Eddie can't hear anything except for the wind and the faint rustling of sheets and the clock ticking and the hum of the house, an undercurrent beneath the rest. That type of white noise used to be soothing for him, lulling him to sleep. Wayne used to tell him he was the kind of baby that could sleep on any car ride, a favorite trick of his grandma's if he'd had a hard time going down for a nap. Now, it just seems to pinprick his ears. He doesn't ever want to move from his cushion and blanket pile, and also wants to get up and jog around the whole house. Jogging! As if he'd ever done that before. Maybe this upside-down shit does change you. There's a louder rustle, and then the soft thump of footsteps, muted from the carpet and socks. Eddie slits his eyes open. He can just make out Steve's figure in the dark, deftly stepping around the lumps of everyone's sleeping forms, weaving his way to the patio door, which he cracks open and then slips through. He doesn't come back. Eddie can't be sure how much time passes, but enough for him to decide, fuck it, honestly, he wasn't sleeping anyway. He hefts himself up, careful not to disturb Robin or Nancy to his left, and creeps out behind Steve. He isn't sure what he was expecting to see. Maybe Steve anxiously pacing around, maybe Steve having a cigarette. Anything, maybe, except Steve hunched over and staring at the empty, still black water of the pool, like it holds the secrets to the universe. The pool lights haven't been turned on, and neither have the patio lights. But the moon is brighter out here, touching the crown of Steve's head, illuminating the slump of his shoulders, his crouched legs, his crossed arms over the top of his knees. The sleeves of his t-shirt flutter in the wind. Eddie tries not to startle him, lest he jump in or something. He snuffs out the thought, then slowly slides the door shut behind him and crosses the concrete, cold seeping in through his socks. "Hey, man," he says, once he reaches the edge of Steve's silhouette. Sure, his footsteps have already given him away. Not that Steve has turned to look. Annie's hand flutters in its pocket, a trapped moth seeking a flame. "Couldn't sleep?" Steve shakes his head mutely, runs a frustrated hand through his hair. "You should, though," he says, voice coming out kind of hoarse. "It's really late." "Yep," says Eddie. "That's exactly what I was thinking. That you should, too." Steve barks out a humorless laugh, then drags his hands down his face. He screams a little into his palms. The noise of it echoes unexpectedly through the night, reverberating across the water. "I can't stop fucking watching the time," he says into his hands. Eddie furrows his brow, unsure if he heard right.
"What? Like the clock?"
Steve shakes himself and rises from his crouch, turning to face Eddie. "It's fine. Ignore me,"
he says, and offers something that's maybe supposed to be a charming smile, as if a magic wand to wave away Eddie's concerns. Like I said, it's late. I'll tell you tomorrow, all right? I'll talk to everyone then. Let's just... Talk to us about what? Eddie interrupts, feeling suddenly like a dog uncovering a bone in a yard Steve didn't intend to lead him to. Steve startles at that, but it's momentary.
Nothing. I mean, just, we'll, like, debrief together and then plan whatever the next move is. Try to get in touch with Ellen and them again.
Don't you already have that mapped out? Eddie asks.
Steve startles a little again, which only makes Eddie double down, inching a step closer, hands raised in an effort to appear disarming.
You sure seem to, with that truck and everything.
That was just... Steve says slowly, and then stops, shakes his head.
Yeah, I did.
The wind blows past both of them.
Steve gestures behind Eddie to the patio door again, saying, "Let's go inside," as if to get Eddie's attention focused there, but that's exactly what makes Eddie so resistant to do it.
How did you know, anyway? He asks, despite himself, biting his lip.
That the truck was there.
Steve shrugs, his eyes slipping sideways.
Long story, man.
Okay, says Eddie, because now he's really sinking his teeth into something. It just seemed like it was stashed there on purpose, with the keys on the windshield and all.
I've been around criminals long enough to put two and two together, man. I mean, I am one.
You're not a criminal, Steve interrupts, eyes flicking over him. You're not like him.
Eddie blanches. Under the moonlight, a shadow seems to fall over Steve, make his eyes look hollow and ghostly, gaunt again, like right after they'd succeeded in defeating Vecna.
It's also confusing and off-putting that instead of asking, "How the fuck would you know that?"
Eddie abruptly changes tack.
"Really, man, are..."
"I told you," Steve says, expression drawn closed, voice growing firm and echoing again. Eddie imagines the pool water rippling.
"It's a long story."
"That wasn't what I..." says Eddie, shaking his head as if ridding it of a fog.
"I was gonna ask if you were all right. For real. Like, should I be worried?"
Steve snorts a laugh. It's just as humorless as earlier, but the way he inclines his head makes the moonlight shift, warming his features, getting out of his eyes.
"Trust me, I don't think anything could kill me now."
He scrubs a hand over his face.
"Was that supposed to reassure me? Because, honestly, that was not reassuring. Not even close," Eddie says.
He braces himself, but you know what? He faced down an army of fucking mutant bats. So he steps closer again, unsure if he's the one cornered between Steve and the lip of the pool, or if he's doing the cornering.
Steve doesn't back away. He drops his hand and finally looks up. Eddie's close enough now to better see into his eyes, which soften as they look back at him. Steve's whole face seems to soften, melting like something sloughing off, an outer layer, a mask to the other mask beneath.
"I'm fine," Steve says quietly, as if just for Eddie.
I promise.
He swallows and shuts his eyes briefly, shakes his head.
"Reassured now?"
"Not really," says Eddie, truthful. "But I think I'll feel better if you come back in with me and at least pretend to sleep."
The window rustles by as Steve's face passes through a series of emotions too quick to really grasp in the dark and tricky light. Through the weird lens of overexhaustion that makes everything feel just out of reach.
Okay, Steve says eventually, nodding. You go first. I'll follow you in. Okay, agrees Eddie, releasing a breath he hadn't realized he was holding. You'll be right behind me? Half of Steve's face rises in a grin at that. Yeah, don't worry. I got your back, he says, more like himself. I'll be right in. Eddie turns then. Something gut level tells him it's so wrong to have Steve out of his sight like this. Probably because they'd had to be vigilant in the heat of battle earlier today, back to back as they'd fought through the madness, and probably because he thought he was learning how to read Steve a little over the last few days, but now he's in a totally different book altogether. He glances over his shoulder once he gets to the patio door, and he's right to. Steve hasn't moved an inch. That hollow look has stolen over his face again. Steve? He asks. Steve's eyes focus on him, expression clearing. He hurries to meet Eddie at the door. Did it get jammed? He asks, reaching around Eddie to get the door open. His chest nearly pressed to Eddie's back, standing behind him with as much familiarity as he'd had moving around in Eddie's wrecked trailer before they'd gotten the hell out of there. Steve's free hand falls on Eddie's hip over his borrowed sweatpants and sleep shirt. Some fast sports car abomination that Eddie had laughed at him about for 5 minutes straight when Steve dug it up for him from the depths of his dresser drawers earlier in the evening. More than familiar. Eddie's breath catches high and tight up in his throat at the warm, unmistakable weight. The tingle of adrenaline shooting through him, making his heart hammer. There, Steve murmurs, keeping his voice low as he slides the door open with his other hand, as if he hasn't even noticed. Go on, I'll be in a minute. With how close he's standing, if Eddie closed his eyes, he'd think Steve was murmuring right into his ear, that Steve's nose was tucked into his hair. Eddie's hands shake as he reaches for the doorframe to haul himself through because what the fuck? Whatever the fuck. It's probably just the overexhaustion. This whole Twilight Zone exchange brought on by not enough sleep and too much fighting for their lives over too many days. And clearly, Steve has a lot cycling through his mind. Probably isn't thinking at all. Not about this, anyway. Eddie twists to look at him over his shoulder once he steps through. On the other side of the doorframe, Steve's eyes are alight, aflame, far different from the hollowness. Eddie swallows thickly, feeling like he missed a step going up a staircase, a burst of confusion surging through him. You should go inside, Steve whispers, his hands braced on the patio side of the wall. Could you do me a favor, actually, and go inside? Why do you keep pushing that on me? What's going to happen if I don't? Eddie says back in a furious whisper. Steve takes a deep breath, eyes flicking up and then down Eddie's face. I'm going to do something I'll regret, he whispers, oddly intense. Like what? Eddie says, forgetting to whisper, heart still hammering in his throat. Because what could Steve, bona fide hero, possibly regret now? I'm gonna kiss you, Steve says, eyes locked onto his. And Eddie would think he's dreaming if it wasn't for Steve saying, tell me if you remember that in the morning, all right? And shutting the sliding door right in front of his face. The end.
You sighed and I was lost in you. Weeks could have passed for all I knew. You were the blanket of the overworld, so I couldn't say, I wouldn't say no.
Reader's notes.
How dare you! Oh, my heart! Oh, poor Steve! And that little bit about Eddie being like, now that he's trusting reality is reality, but Steve cannot trust that this loop of reality is still reality. Oh, I'm flailing so hard I literally just whacked my mic. Oh, my heart! It burns! It aches! It's the best kind of time loop from the outside and not knowing!
All right, so headcanon time. Yes, the time loop did work. Tomorrow, Steve will wake up, and it will be tomorrow, and it'll be the first tomorrow he's had in an infinite amount of tomorrows. And now he's got to put his money where his mouth is, and also explain to Dustin that time travel does work, and there's no way to prove it because this is the loop that settled. So sorry, Dustin. Your scientific curiosity has been thwarted. Thank you so much to And What You Said for having blanket permission to Podfic. This story was recorded as an ITPE 2024 gift for Deepest Blue Sky. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it left you screaming, crying, clawing at the walls, and chewing on furniture as well. Because that's what a good time loop does. You just gnaw on the furniture until the loop resets, and then you gnaw again. For everyone else who's listening, I hope you enjoyed it as well. We'd love a time loop here in this fandom. Don't forget to check out the rest of the ITPE 2024 collection. This year, it's the informal Tumblr Podfic Exchange. We are running on Tumblr. We are no longer running on Twitter. But the gifting is still happening, and the, you know, spirit of Podfic be with you. So yes, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day.
And they all said, you're too young to even know. Just don't let it grow and you'll be stronger without and bitter now. My world is at your feet. I was lost and I was found, but I was alive and now I've drowned. So now I will be waiting for the world to hear my song, so they can tell me I was wrong. But they went there beneath your stare, and they weren't stripped till they were bare of any bindings from the world outside that room. And they went taken by the hand and led through fields of naked land where any preconceived ideas were blown away. They went there beneath your stare, and they went stripped till they were bare of any bindings from the world outside that room. They went taken by the hand and led through fields of naked land where any preconceived ideas were blown away. So I couldn't say no.